You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our election catch-up with Dr. Nina Suv from the Opportunities Party.
This week, I caught up with Opportunities Party's Ipsum candidate, Dr. Nina Suv, for our bi-weekly conversation in the lead-up to this year's election. The Opportunity Party has released three major environmental priorities: electrifying our public transport by 2030, empowering farmers to foster biodiversity, and rejuvenating the emissions trading scheme. During our conversation, we spoke about the Opportunity Party's environmental policies, but first we covered last week's policy focus on the wire, human issues. I began by asking Dr. Suv about the Opportunity Party's commitment to Te Tiriti o Waitangi and funding for the arts.
For the Opportunities Party, upholding the rights of the Te Tiriti o Waitangi is actually part of our constitution. So that's something that we hold really dear to us. When it comes to things like co-governance, we support co-governance as it has been in the past. So iwi Māori partnership boards have been there in terms of local government and all sorts of places already. We absolutely support that because we believe that, you know, achieving equity should be a key goal for New Zealand in all aspects, whether it's health, education, economic opportunities, things like that. You know, we are the Opportunities Party. We want to have equal opportunities for everyone. When it comes to co-governance and how it's been used in things like Three Waters, we have some questions about that because we think that actually, in terms of how we manage water infrastructure, it's not really so much a structural issue as it is a funding issue. So when we talk about co-governance, and I think it's sort of been muddied in the waters when we talk about co-governance and Te Tiriti and all that, we absolutely support a partnership between Māori and non-Māori for things like natural bodies of water, because there are some places, for example, Lake Horowhenua, which are probably some of the most polluted waters in the country, and absolutely we should be supporting that local iwi to help clean up that water, to make sure that they're not so polluted by the local farms and things like that. We should absolutely be doing that. But when we talk about co-governance in the form of Three Waters and local water infrastructure, I mean, those are just pipes in the ground, right? And what we should be doing is being like, well, what's actually the problem here when we have failing local water infrastructure? Well, the problem really is that we've given all of this responsibility to local government to improve local water infrastructure, but we haven't really given them enough funding. The funding that they get from local rates has just not been enough to actually upgrade and maintain local water infrastructure. And so what we're saying is, well, centralising the Three Waters through the Three Waters program is actually not going to fix the problem. What we should actually be doing is saying central government is going to partner with local government to actually provide the funding required to fix this issue. And so I think this whole co-governance thing has been blown way up out of the water with this people on both sides being very pro-co-governance, people being very anti-co-governance. But I think at the core of it, we do believe that we should be supporting Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and we're not so sure about centralisation of power.
And you spoke a little bit there about funding, and you spoke about your party being the Opportunities Party and being for opportunity. So this is Human Issues Week. So as well as asking about Te Tiriti and Māori rights, I also wanted to ask about funding for the arts as well. Arts is a major part of our society, and a lot of Māori and Pacifica people are involved in the arts. And it's often underfunded. And in this lead up to the election, there's been a lot of talk around Creative New Zealand, their funding decisions. And for some parties, it's become a way to attack arts. And a lot of artists and people who are involved in that space are afraid that should certain parties be elected, arts funding will be cut. So basically, I wanted to ask how the Opportunities Party plans to support and uplift creatives in New Zealand, and what your plans are for a crown entity like Creative NZ.
So for us, we really value the sort of undervalued work that gets done in New Zealand. So I'll give you an example, is that in the early 2000s, there used to be a lot of well-funded youth programs in South Auckland. So a lot of arts, performing arts, you know, we produce some of the best hip-hop dance crews in the world right here in South Auckland, for example. But then later on in subsequent governments, we had a lot of cutting to these programs because we thought, oh, you know, we've got to have a bit more austerity, and crime's not an issue, so why would we need to fund these programs? And now what we've seen is actually because young people don't have access to the arts and, you know, that feeling of belonging in their community is that, you know, people are acting out in various different ways or just being disconnected from the community in various different ways. So we would absolutely support funding to go towards the arts, whether it's performing arts or visual arts, whatever. And then to add to that is, you know, the Opportunities Party's long-term vision is universal basic income, because we recognise that there's a lot of good work that gets done in the community, whether it's volunteering or, you know, just being part of community groups that is not valued in this country. About 20% of New Zealand's GDP is, you know, from volunteer labour, whether it's things like, you know, just looking after children or, you know, get involved in the community, being, you know, a coach for the football team, you know, things like that. And so we think that universal basic income is the long-term vision to actually value the, you know, unpaid labour, that it actually brings a lot of value to our communities, and that would help for people who are artists who, you know, maybe between you know, artist gigs or between, you know, big art projects, things like that. So that's our vision, is universal basic income, because there's so much valuable work that is being done in New Zealand but is not being paid for or, you know, valued from an economic sense.
Yes, and that's, I think, a major draw card for a lot of people to your party, is they see how much good can be done from people who don't have to worry about being below the poverty line. And
yeah, it costs us to have people who are, you know, it really costs us to have people who are poor, really. That's how we see it. It's actually probably cheaper if we helped people out of poverty in terms of the long-term, you know, economic health issues down the line.
I wanted to just pivot now, because this week is our environmental week. So I wanted to leave human issues for now, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the Telcard policy and where the money's coming from. So $200 million in your budgeting for the Telcard would come from the Climate Emergency Response Fund. Is it counterintuitive to, you know, climate issues and helping our climate to take money out of a fund that's targeted at helping our climate?
Yeah, so the Climate Emergency Response Fund is specifically to help with, you know, things that will tackle the climate emergency, right? And so for one of our things is actually the, you know, that $200 million directly goes towards providing public transport for people who are under 30, as well as contributing towards the bike subsidy as well. Because we know that people being able to access public transport, people you know, being able to bike around, that's going to reduce our carbon emissions, and that's going to have added effects for health outcomes as well. Because people who bike and people who use public transport are more active than people who don't.
You touched on it there. You've kind of got three major themes in your climate policy. You've got policy about electrifying our public transport, policy around what your Opportunities Party has described as an emissions trading scheme with teeth, and policy around empowering farmers. And farmers, that's quite an interesting policy when it comes to climate change, because farmers are often brought up in the discourse in the opposite manner, and we're told to regulate farmers. So I wanted to ask a little bit about that, about empowering farmers while also reducing emissions.
I think, you know, there are plenty of farmers who are already invested in, you know, the environment. You know, they're living it day in, day out. They are working in the environment that we're talking about. And so there are a lot of farmers who are wanting to do their best already when it comes to looking after the environment. They want to look after the waterways. They want to, you know, plant native, plant biodiverse, but they're not necessarily given the tools to do that or the funding to do that, because, you know, their margins are slim, right? But we do rely on farmers because they provide the biggest export to our country. So we need to work with them in partnership. And what we've seen with the emissions trading scheme, with this focus on forestry, is that for some people, it, you know, makes more economic sense for them to plant pine rather than actually farm that land. And, you know, it's seen to be, you know, better for the climate because, you know, of carbon sequestration and all that. But what we've seen actually is that that pine forestry is not actually good for the environment, because when we talk about climate change, it's not just climate change, it's environment in terms of, you know, what's actually happening right now, not just, you know, global warming and such. And what we see with pine forestry is that the roots aren't very deep, so it doesn't really help with soil erosion. The pine needles turn the soil acidic, so it actually destroys the soil as well. And pine doesn't actually really add in terms of local biodiversity with insects and birds and other things like that. And we don't reward farmers for biodiversity, which is, you know, planting more natives, because we haven't, I think that the problem is there hasn't been the study of, you know, how much does a totara tree, you know, provide in terms of carbon sequestration versus the pine tree, which has been well well-studied in this aspect. So what we want to say is let's give biodiversity credits to farmers who want to plant native, plant biodiverse, and also clean up their waterways by, you know, fencing their waterways, planting, you know, riparian plants to make sure that, you know, we have filters of their land before it even gets to the rivers as well. Because we need to be doing this as a partnership. We can't just be labelling farmers as, you know, being bad for the environment, because, you know, there are ways that we can do this better. And, you know, we would support things like, you know, changing of the regulation of bioengineering so that we can actually look at how can we, you know, make farming more efficient, make farming, you know, reduce the amount of emissions from farming. Because we have, you know, we have a successful agri-tech sector in New Zealand who are doing things like looking into genetically engineered grasses that will, you know, potentially reduce methane. But we actually can't do any field research for that in New Zealand. It has to be done in America, where they have looser regulations on genetic engineering, because there are actually different types of genetic engineering. There's some that involves changing the genetic sequence, and then there's others, which is actually just turning on and off genes rather than actually, you know, changing the genetic sequence. So they're two different types of genetic engineering. I think we need to have a bit more of a pragmatic approach to this.
Would the Opportunities Party then reduce restrictions and regulations around genetic engineering?
Yeah, so that's one of our policies. It's not one of our policies at the moment, our official policies, but that's what we've been running on in 2020. Our candidate, Dr. Ben Peters, is a biochemist down in Dunedin, and that's something that he, you know, has done research on and has a lot of knowledge and experience on. And we would look at genetic engineering from a more pragmatic approach, because there's different levels of genetic engineering and different potential effects. And we would say, actually, switching on and off genes is, you know, not you know, this crazy thing out there that we, you know, can't have. So it's quite different from, say, genetic editing.
Yes. And I think that's a position that's becoming increasingly more popular. I just wanted to wrap up with a big talking point for in the discourse around climate change and our environmental policy, and that's the emissions trading scheme. So I just wanted to delve into that a little bit and ask how TOP plan to rejuvenate the emissions trading scheme in order for it to be more effective.
Yeah, so what we've noticed with the emissions trading scheme is that because we're, you know, focusing on new forestry, what that's actually done is cheapen the carbon tax credit. So in terms of net, like, are we actually reducing our total carbon emissions? I would say we're probably not, because the carbon tax credits have become so cheap, then emitters don't have that same incentive to actually reduce their emissions. They just buy more carbon tax credits, right? So what we say is let's exclude any new forestry, put a hard cap on the units, and actually empower the Climate Change Commission to set the carbon price through a new efficient carbon rate, a new official carbon rate, and then reinvesting more of the scheme's revenues into renewable energy development, emissions-free transport, and a carbon dividend. So, you know, we actually need an emissions trading scheme that's going to work, one that's actually going to, you know, incentivize people to reduce emissions, because, you know, there is a place for carbon sequestration, but we also need to be looking at how can we reduce overall emissions as well.
That was Dr. Nina Su, the Opportunities Party's Ipsum candidate, discussing commitment to Te Tiriti, arts funding, and their environmental policy.
That was Dr. Nina Su from the Opportunities Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.